Martinez is currently accused of stealing $11 million in tax payments from more than a dozen clients. Prosecutors say Martinez used that money to pay for a lavish lifestyle, including this mansion in Ramona. Now, Martinez was arrested for witness tampering, but more charges could be filed against him. We'll find out much more on this case coming up on Monday when he is arraigned. Reporting live downtown, I'm Tony Shin, NBC7 San Diego.
Welcome back to part two of our podcast episode on this case of Steven Martinez, the IRS agent turned CPA turned con man who allegedly stole millions of dollars from his clients. In part one, we discussed Steven's background, the accusations against him, and the conditions of his pretrial release. Now, we're going to delve into what happened next, the shocking turn of events that made this case even more unbelievable. We'll cover his legal negotiations. Stay tuned as we continue to get into the mind of a fraudster, from trusted tax professional to criminal mastermind, the unbelievable true story of Steve Martinez's double life as a con artist and his desperate attempts to silence those who stood in his way. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tax Crime Junkies, the podcast about true tax crimes. I'm your host, Dominique. I'm a CPA, certified tax strategist, and I have an interest in true crimes. I have a degree in law, and I lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners. And with me today is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom Gorzinski.
Thanks, Dom. I'm Tom Gorzinski. I'm an enrolled agent. I practice before the United States Tax Court as a non-attorney. I'm a tax instructor. And like you, I have a real interest in true crime. So we decided to create a true crime podcast to combine our love of mysteries and whodunits. This is Tax Crime Junkies. And our latest case happens to be a continuation from our last episode, where we talked about Steven Martinez stole over $11 million from his clients by creating a DBA bank account where he had his clients deposit their tax payments.
And then he would make a new tax return, reporting majorly lower income, so that the tax was much lower and he would pocket the difference because the client had their check cashed. They were none the wiser, thinking the whole time that the taxes were done and they were paid up for the year. And then remember, around June 2009, he found out that the FBI had been investigating him, and he immediately started to rip off other people to pay off the first victims of the initial fraud. He essentially continued to commit more fraud in order to cover up previous fraud.
That's right. Remember, he met with clients, he confessed to stealing their money, and then offered them restitution, right?
I would love to have seen that. That would have been quite a show. He's acting contrite, he's asking forgiveness, he repaid some of the money, but with money he also stole. And here's what the U.S. attorney and FBI special agent Hector Luna had to say about the status of Steven's case.
The IRS case was not looking good. I think he was a desperate man. But with his resources, his money, his wealth, I think he thought that money could buy his way out.
And what was he spending all the stolen money on, Tom?
Well, remember, there was that $700,000 pool?
Oh, that's right. What in the world is in a $700,000 pool?
Well, I mean, it's got to be pretty nice. You know, swim-up bar, a little beach, a waterfall, a grotto.
That does sound nice, but is $700,000 nice?
Well, if you're wondering what Steven's pool actually looks like, we've got a picture of it on our website at taxcrimejunkies.com, where you can see that picture and copies of his Super Bowl tickets, private planes, boats, and beach homes in Mexico.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it here. It's pretty nice. I wonder if any of the clients he stole from ever saw it or used it.
Oh, I doubt that.
So remember from last time, Stephen even bought a limousine and he hired a driver named Norman to take him around town. And remember, he also gave Norman a paper bag with $40,000 cash in it.
Oh, yeah, we do. Do we know what Norman did with the cash? I mean, where would you even place that much cash for safekeeping, Dominique?
Well, not where Norman hid it, that's for sure. I don't know. I might put it in a safe or a, you know, right, secret panel in the wall. Norman put it inside of a cereal box on top of his refrigerator.
Well, I guess it's safe to say that no one would think to look in there, right?
I guess if it's shredded wheat.
cereal.
So where we left off last time, Tom, was Martinez was arrested April 15, 2011. Then he bails out.
That's right. And he begged his friends to help him with a bond. And one friend, he saved his life, pledged his home. Another attorney just signed without collateral.
So now he's out on certain conditions. And where we left off is he makes the special request of the court to modify the terms of his bail so that he can go with his family on a Disney cruise.
Yes, on December 13th, 2011, Stephen asked for permission from the court to modify the terms of his bail to go on that cruise with his family. Of course, that meant the temporary release of his passport, which the court had seized.
So let's just pause on this for a moment. Here's Stephen. He's standing in front of a judge. He's nervously begging for his freedom. He'd been arrested, he was released on bail, you know, 7 months prior, and now he wants the court to allow him to get his passport back, remove the ankle monitor, and knowingly leave the country, in his argument, also that he could take his family on a Disney cruise. It was an outrageous request, one that seemed impossible to grant. But Stephen argued passionately about how it would benefit not only himself, but remember he mentioned his 8-year-old son who had autism, and he told the judge that if this trip didn't happen, then it would forever traumatize the boy. And he was complaining about the ankle monitor that was preventing him from being a good father. After all, I mean, he couldn't kick a soccer ball or go into the ocean with it on.
Well, of course, all he wanted to be is a good father, right, Dominique? So the courtroom was eerily silent as everyone waited for the judge's decision. Each person in attendance was mulling over their own thoughts as they tried to decide whether or not Steve deserved another chance. To some, it seemed like too much risk to take. After all, he had been arrested before. He could be attempting to flee right from under their noses. But there were others who saw a different side of him. Someone desperate yet determined enough to do whatever it took for his son's dreams to come true, even if it meant sacrificing himself in order to make them happen.
Uh-huh.
And Dominique, they laid it on thick too. Martinez's attorney explained to the court that his middle son, who was, again, 8 at the time, had autism. He just had to go on the cruise.
Okay.
And part of his son's care included rewarding him with stickers on a sticker chart for successfully completing activities, with the grand prize being related to Disney, and his son loved Disney.
Oh, my God. They do know that Disneyland is about 90 minutes away from where the Martinez's live in San Diego County, right?
Well, the judge, the attorney pointed this out, but the attorney said, well, they already told his son about the cruise, and the disappointment would simply be devastating for him and set back his development with his autism.
Oh, please. That is a whole new one. And don't tell me the court bought it.
Indeed they did.
No way.
Yes. Unfortunately, and I say unfortunately, because it seems that during this vacation, Martinez decided he wasn't going to go back to jail.
Okay, so he gets his ankle monitor cut off. He goes on the Disney cruise with his family. And now we're in January of 2012.
With the blessing of the court.
With the blessing of the court.
So Steve had been behind bars and out on bail for 8 months. But now he was free. And after his ankle monitor came off, Steve set off on a Disney cruise with his family to celebrate. His wife and children were so excited. They actually barely noticed that Steve was unusually quiet throughout the trip.
Well, I bet he was. Because little did anyone know that while everyone else on board was having fun, Steve's mind was whirring away as he plotted and schemed about how to avoid being sent back to prison for good. He knew it was going to take something drastic if he wanted to stay free, even if it meant committing murder in order to do so. So Steve goes on the cruise, comes back, and he keeps this secret close over the next few weeks as he went through all the motions of regular life, going grocery shopping with his wife, playing soccer in the park with his kids, attending family gatherings, smiling at neighbors when he's out walking the dog. But beneath all those mundane activities, there was a dark plot brewing within him, one that could potentially cause irreparable harm, not only to himself, but to those closest around him. And I think the real reason for getting the ankle monitor off is he's now stalking some of the witnesses in the case to learn about where they live and what they do with their time.
That's right. By March 2012, Steve felt ready or desperate enough to finally act upon what he'd been planning. On that day, no one saw him slip away from the home early in the morning, nor follow up on the mysterious errand he had gone out to complete.
So Steve quickly realizes that despite being free from prison, there were still people who wanted him locked away forever. And as long as they were in power, they'd do anything they could to see him behind bars again. And that's what drove Steve into desperation. So if murder was what it was going to take for him to be free, then so be it. He would not let them control him anymore. So there's witnesses against him in this case. The government had been surveying him for a while and investigating, and so he arms himself. He's got determination, he's got cunning plans, and he started plotting ways in which he could evade capture yet again. But little did he know that this decision would come back to haunt him in ways neither himself nor anyone else expected.
Steve pulled up to the house of his former gardener, Ray, with a sense of anticipation. He had called him earlier that morning and told him, "Hey, I need to see you right away. It was an urgent matter," Steve said. And of course, it was something he couldn't discuss over the phone. So Ray opened the door with a little caution as Steve stepped out of his car and made his way up the walkway. As they embraced in greeting each other, Ray could feel something hard tucked under Steve's coat.
Was he just happy to see him, Tom?
No. 4 packages filled with documents containing personal identifying information about 4 separate individuals, 2 of them being Marianne Harmon and Monique Siegel. "What's this?" Ray asked him, of course, as he's looking at these packages, right? Because this is kind of strange. He placed them on the table. Ray told him, "I don't want to get in any trouble." Steve grinned, of course, at Ray's concern. He laid out 2 color photographs side by side for him to see. One with Marianne's condo unit, another showing Monique's home with notations like front door, patio. "That bitch declared Steve with a hint of sarcasm in his voice, Marianne wore a wire on me during our conversation. So see where this is going.
Yep, yep.
Now, he continued and said, you know, I'm presently being indicted for tax charges. So if you help me out here, I can make you rich for life. You should definitely get a silencer and use two separate guns for the job. Now, Ray shook his head slowly as he took all this in. His language, the photos, the implication he was rich from tax fraud. I think we know what the implication was of what Steve was asking him. He was skeptical yet kind of compelled by this offer from someone who he had been close to for years when they were working together. And Steven tells Ray he'll get part of the money, $40,000 in cash from, drumroll, Norman. The guy.
Norman. Wow. Norman, that's what the cash was for.
Right. But
it's in a cereal box on Norman's refrigerator.
But Ray didn't take the bait. You know, he gathered some courage, he contacted the FBI, and he told them. And of course, that was a signal that whatever friendship those two had shared, that was gone. So the FBI listened to Ray as the plot unfolded, and they took quick action. They had to. You know, Ray turned over the folders of information. All of this detailed information about his targets on everything from their stature and athletics to whether they had a dog in the home. And here's the FBI and assistant U.S. attorney describing what was there.
Anytime you have someone that's threatening to go out and commit murder, it receives our highest attention. He was offering up to $100,000 to have these witnesses killed.
Now the feds are on to him.
They're on to him.
And they set up a second meeting between Ray the gardener and Martinez at Martinez's office. But of course, the FBI did a undercover recording of that follow-up meeting, and here's a clip.
So, that's the front door. Over here, you can't see over here, there's some condominiums over here. You see, this is the fence for the patio door. She never
locked the door. Wow, Tom, that's diabolical.
It really is. And when it comes to evidence in the trial, it's clips like this that they're powerful. Because here you have the defendant, in his own words, telling someone he wants to kill his clients. Now, I've had clients irritate me to no end, but kill?
With incredibly powerful evidence like this, it kind of makes the tax fraud case a slam dunk, right? I mean, if he wants to kill his clients, he could absolutely be capable of stealing from them. But isn't this what is referred to as a 403 evidence? So I guess it wouldn't necessarily be admitted if it was too prejudicial.
Well, that's interesting. So Rule 403 of the Federal Rules of Evidence states that the court can exclude evidence that's relevant if its probative value is substantially outweighed by a danger that it may unfairly prejudice the situation. So with murder for hire plots being so extreme, there is a chance that it could be unfairly prejudicial when a jury is simply considering financial crimes. So it's possible it could be excluded unless the government can show that its probative value outweighs the potential unfair prejudice.
So in this case, the prosecution could make an offer of proof, which is just a presentation of evidence outside the presence of the jury for the purpose of establishing the admissibility of the evidence. And when they offer this proof, it allows the judge to evaluate the undercover video and determine whether it does have the probative value and whether that value is substantially outweighed by any of the dangers that are listed in 403. So to make an offer of proof, the party seeking to admit the evidence can present testimony, documents, or other evidence that shows how the evidence is relevant, material, and admissible under the rules of evidence exceptions. And so the party seeking to admit the evidence may also argue that the probative value of the evidence outweighs any potential dangers and that the evidence is necessary for a fair and just resolution of the case. The judge considers all the evidence, all the arguments presented by both parties, because of course the opposing counsel is going to argue that it's too prejudicial. And then eventually they're going to make a determination as to whether that evidence should be admitted. And if the judge determines that the evidence has probative value and should be admitted, the evidence can be presented to the jury for their consideration.
All right, Dominique. So do we know how the court ruled?
Not exactly, Tom, because they never actually made it to trial. Many judges will address the offer of proof at the time of trial outside the presence of the jury, not as a pretrial motion, because they want to get a chance to establish what the case is about and how each side is going to present their case. So if the case settles, then you never know how the court might have ruled on it.
But he's still charged in the murder for hire plot. So let's see here. He's got multiple counts related to wire fraud, tax evasion, filing false tax returns, and now conspiracy for attempted murder, solicitation of murder, witness tampering. Wow, now we know why he needed a cruise. He was busy thinking this all up. So he knows he's in trouble now. He's arrested in his office again.
His work neighbors must have been going crazy.
We just saw, you know, a van full of FBI agents with their FBI vests coming out of the van and heading toward the stairwell, and saw at least one of the agents, you know, take out her gun, and then they put him in the van and then they took off from there.
So, Dominique, he's got to know that he's not going to get away with this now, right?
So he pleads guilty?
Well, not exactly. They attempt some things first. In November 2012, Martinez requests relief from the court to be examined by a mental health professional to establish competency to stand trial.
Here it comes. Is he incompetent to stand trial?
Well,
I see. He was mentally ill and he couldn't have committed the crimes because he couldn't distinguish right from wrong.
Well, no. He claimed he had Asperger's syndrome. And Asperger's sometimes causes individuals to have magical thinking.
Oh my God.
They have a childish inability to envision long-term consequences. So the fact that he purportedly hired someone to kill witnesses was because of his Asperger's syndrome.
Oh, come on. So defense is claiming that people with Asperger's are killers because they don't know that someone will actually die? This guy is so far-fetched. Can my client get out to take a cruise? Can my client remove his curfew? Can my client have his passport back? Can you just please excuse my client's behavior because he's autistic?
I know, and this is what must be insulting to his child and his child's mother, who's actually taking care of somebody full-time with autism. Asperger's is one of the more unusual forms of autism, but it obviously doesn't excuse responsibility for someone's behavior.
Although Elon Musk has shared publicly that he has Asperger's, but
right.
He uses his to send rockets to space and build self-driving cars.
Right.
But I digress.
Well, you know, okay, let's take a step back. Every defendant is entitled to a zealous defense. Right? So how much more zealous can you get than I have a disability or condition that means I didn't think anyone could actually die in this situation?
I'm just hoping that the court actually saw through this nonsense.
Well, they did. So then they did a plea agreement.
He did. Finally, in April of 2013, he was sentenced. So remember, the whole murder for hire thing was a full year before this. But he did take the plea. He was sentenced. And that was an interesting hearing because Stephen Martinez actually had a ton of support in the courtroom in the form of letters from clients. 27 people showed up for him to watch, including his children and his wife. And most of the people referenced that this is not the man that they knew, and they could not believe the charges against him. And in fact, they didn't think they were true.
He must have been an amazing con man when he's done such a job to convince the people he swindled that he actually was supposedly honest.
Exactly. His attorney referenced the fact that he sat down with the early victims, told them what he had done, and paid nearly $1 million to make them whole.
Yeah, with money he stole from other clients.
You know, he didn't really mention that part.
That's a real shock.
So the defense attorney went on to describe how he's such a helper, a family man, and he's only doing this for his 8-year-old autistic son.
You know, that's a bunch of baloney. Where do private planes, limos, motorhomes, a Mexican beach house, cereal boxes with cash stuffed in them fit into helping his son?
Right? He also went on to express the deal with the Aspergers and how he didn't really know what he was doing.
Yeah, Stephen himself mentioned a bit of this when he allocated to the court. He said, quote, "I am told that Dr. Murphy has an explanation for my conduct, Your Honor. I and my family are relieved to have some answers to many of my behavioral actions that have plagued me for as long as I can remember. I am anxious to understand more and get the help I need."
What does he need? Another Disney cruise?
Right. And, you know, he simply is, in his allocution, is not deflecting responsibility.
Right.
Again, right? Now, it's not him, it's his condition that caused him to do all these terrible things. But, Dominique, you know, judges are pretty smart, and I bet they hear it all. And I'm sure it didn't help that Martinez tried to commit murder after he got relief from bail conditions, remember?
Yeah.
The judge in this case noted the timeline and how that was not consistent with Martinez was telling the court that he was stealing in later years to pay back earlier victims. He continued to commit fraud in order to cover it up. Frankly, his words are just words. That when he says he didn't think it was going to amount to anything is inconsistent with what he represented there.
It is interesting in these cases, Tom, to hear what the judges say in their sentencing. I'm always eager to read something if they've expounded on their judgment. And they'll often explain the rationalization or the reason behind the punishment. And so in this case, the judge wanted the sentence to reflect the seriousness of the case and also the fact that he was held in a trusted position. We've talked about that before on this show,
yes,
that we are elevated in terms of responsibility by our licensure. And he wore that badge of CPA, and people trusted him when he told them who to make the checks payable to. Yeah. And he also mentioned wanting to protect the public from future crimes. I mean, this guy tried to have people killed.
Right.
So he wanted to offer peace of mind to the victims here. And had he just been sentenced to the financial crimes and tax evasion, he was looking at 10 years for that. What did he end up getting, Tom?
So he got 286 months, $14 million of restitution.
Let's see, 286, that's about 24 years. That's good. It sounds like he can use that time to learn right from wrong. I also see here he was sentenced to a 500-hour drug problem. Do you think he's also an addict, Tom?
You know, I don't know. But honestly, that wouldn't surprise me with some of the strange decisions he made. Perhaps it was the influence of substances that caused his brain to not to work. Often people with addiction problems need so much cash, so they go to crime in order to fund their addiction, whether it's drugs, gambling. And when you deal with people with tax problems, you often see these types of behaviors, honestly, more often than you realize. And I mean, he did steal over $11 million. I mean, he has a nice pool, but where did all the money go?
True. I mean, that's my question always, is follow the money, right? Where does all this money go? Is he claiming that he spent? It wasn't claimed in the court records, but on top of the $11 million, he owed about $3 to $4 million in taxes on the evasion charge. And so that's going to take a long time of making license plates.
Yes, but Dominique, the story is not exactly over yet.
It isn't. Do you want to talk about the disbarred attorney or his friend's home loss next?
Well, let's talk about the friend's home loss. So now remember the two friends who signed for his bond?
Yes. Remember one's wife said no house collateral, right? And one friend said yes to the house collateral.
Yeah, right. The murder plot, right? Is this where we're going?
Yes, exactly. So when you sign for someone on a bond, you're providing surety that they will show up to court.
That's right. And it's not just showing up to court. It's also a promise that the defendant will stay out of trouble. Remember, he had all of those different conditions for his release.
Right. The ankle monitor, the curfew, the limitation to the county, etc.
So when you place the bond, you're ensuring they show up and that they will obey the law. So when the conditions are violated, the court can collect the bond.
So that means that the house, in the case of the Mission Bay Club friends, has a lien against it, right? And the court can enforce that lien and force them to sell the house. And so that's what happened. The court is now trying to collect that bond because, after all, he did commit crime while out on bond. So what about the attorney friend?
Well, remember, he is the one whose wife was like, no way are we going to pledge our house. But he still signed it. Without collateral, he was on the hook for the $500,000 bond. He's got to pay it.
And so the court started foreclosure proceedings on the house, and they sent a bill to the attorney friend?
Yeah, it's called forfeiting the bond and taking the home.
That seems so unfair.
I know, but the court noted in the petitions of the friends that they agreed to all of the conditions and were asked questions during the process to clarify what they were doing. Now, I still have a concern as to why the judge even went this route. It would have been so reasonable for the judge to just say no, right? And not let him go on the cruise, not relax any of the conditions. But because the judge did this, it basically facilitated Martinez to break the conditions of his release.
That's a great idea for defense, Tom. I'm surprised his defense attorney didn't use that. Get up and argue and go, it's your fault, judge. So they, of course, opposed and fought the charges. I mean, they're going to lose their house here. The attorney's on the hook for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, but that costs money in legal fees. As you know, Dominique, you know, lawyers are not free most of the time, just on TV. They had to request that the court set aside or remit the forfeiture. And it took well over a year, but the friends were able to be excused from all but $13,000 of the bond.
It was interesting, too, because the $13,000 was still left as a debt owed by the friends. In the logic of the court, it was what they spent on the surveillance and the investigation of the murder for hire plot.
Right.
So they kind of estimated that's what they spent. So now Martinez has swindled again. Legal fees, stress, and another $13,000. That is so awful.
He brings down everybody in his circle, right? Clients, friends, blaming it on family. There's no depth to who he will use to get his way. You know, and this is another example of where really being aware of what you're pledging is imperative. His friend's an attorney, and he didn't even realize what he was committing to when he signed for his friend.
Yeah. Also, get better friends.
So what about the attorney, Dominique? I think there's something you wanted to say about that.
Well, I did a little digging. It didn't sit well with me how the lawyer used the 8-year-old boy with autism to get his client onto that Disney cruise.
Right.
And it just seemed like a low. Now, he was successful, so I'm sure Steven Martinez was thrilled with his work, right? But I hated how he tried to have him declared incompetent to avoid the consequences of his crimes. And, you know, there's representing somebody and offering a zealous defense, and then there's just sort of slimy. And so yeah. I figured out why, and it totally makes sense now. Mr. Demergen, who is the defense attorney,
okay. He
himself has stolen money from clients in the past and was previously disbarred.
Wait a minute. So he essentially is just as unethical as Martinez.
Well, I don't know if you can say just as. It was back in 1989, but he misappropriated funds of over $25,000 from a client trust account.
Wow.
And you know what they say, birds of a feather.
He probably wished he could have been excused for a cruise. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Tax Crime Junkies. Remember, as we uncover the stories of tax fraud and white-collar crime, we're not just exposing the criminals, but also the loopholes in the system. We hope you'll join us next week as we continue our mission to find the loopholes that went left and close them for good. Until next time, remember, every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Tax Crime Junkies. If you'd like to share what you think about this case, you can contact us at taxcrimejunkies.com or on Twitter at taxcrimejunkies. Also, remember to subscribe to get notified when we're back with our next episode. And if you love this one, please jump on Apple or Google Play to give us a positive rating. Have a great day.